Well, happy Veterans Day to you. Today is the 11th day of the 11th month of 2015. And we do give a shout out to veterans and those in the military. We want to thank them for helping create America from the times of the Revolutionary War and keeping us safe up till today. Very much so. And this country obviously doesn't really honor its vets, in part, I think, because we have a volunteer service here. So the tendency is to take for granted, especially when everybody's not having the same experience. But if without the military that we had today, not only would we not be free, but the world wouldn't be free. There's an argument for that. And I've got a little bit on that. I was trying to find the best possible clip I could find for this, but there's just so many of them. But I don't know. It's kind of an interesting spot that we find ourselves in now, because you would be, if you went out and especially, I think, spoke to younger people who had never been through the kind of war, the world wars, obviously, there's not too many people around that were survivors of that, but people that were, had gone through major conflicts, the younger generations have been fed a lot of misinformation about America. And so there's not as much enthusiasm. But, you know, when you listen to why people don't support America, it's usually pretty flimsy. But anyway, here's a little bit from the History Channel.
Soldiers from wars both old and new march down city streets. Flags hang from homes, businesses, even car antennas. Ceremonies remember those who dutifully served their nation. It's Veterans Day, or Remembrance Day, as it's known in much of the world. A time to honor members of the armed forces. And it all began in a railroad car with a document to end the war to end all wars. World War I, also known as the Great War, shocked the global community with its unprecedented toll in human life. Untold millions were killed. Germany was running low on manpower and supplies, so they agreed to sign an armistice, or truce, in the French commander Ferdinand Foch's private rail car. On the 11th hour, on the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918, all was quiet on the Western Front. The fighting had ended. Exactly 1 year later, President Woodrow Wilson decreed that Americans should observe a moment of silence at 11 a.m. to remember the armistice and to embrace the peace. Other Allied nations commemorated the peaceful anniversary as well. In England and Canada, citizens wore paper poppies. Poppies had become a symbol of the armistice. The poem Flanders Field described a one-time battlefield. In Flanders Field, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row. In America, the nation's first unknown soldier was laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery on Armistice Day, 1921. He was a casualty of the Great War. Since that first memorial, other unknown soldiers from America's wars have been interred in the tomb. And it's become tradition for the president or one of his representatives to lay a wreath on the monument every November 11th. A resolution was passed in 1926 inviting all Americans to remember Armistice Day and the soldiers who fought so hard for peace. The idea caught on. By 1938, the day was marked with so many ceremonies and parades, Congress made it a legal holiday, giving people the day off work. After World War II and the Korean War, Americans wanted to open up the holiday to include not just World War I veterans, but all who served in combat. In 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower, a World War II vet himself, legally changed the U.S. Armistice Day to Veterans Day, honoring those who served in all American wars. For a brief time, starting in 1971, Congress moved the holiday to the fourth Monday in October, giving Americans a 3-day weekend. but most people rejected the idea. The traditional date of November 11th, the anniversary of the Great War's ceasefire, was too historically important to forget. President Ford reversed the law in 1975, returning Veterans Day back to its rightful date. Over the decades, the holiday has changed with the times. Originally, it was a call for world peace. Then in the U.S., it became a day to remember war veterans. Today, Veterans Day is set aside to honor not just those who served in war, but also those who have served their nation in peace.
All right, that's pretty good. And now I have a little clip here from the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And that on for you. But it's great. It's great to actually live in a country where there's a volunteer force. So you can say one way or the other, this person chose to go in. And maybe for some people, obviously, they would say, I don't know what else to do with my life. But that's still, you know, that's still coming in involuntary. And I think for a lot of people, the experience of being in the military changes their life forever in a positive way. And for other people, it becomes their life. You know, I've met many people in my life that their entire experience in life has been framed and informed by the military. And a lot of those people are some of the best people that you'll ever meet. You know, they're honest, they're polite. They know what duty and sacrifice is about and everything. All right, this is the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, about that. And it says silence and respect, Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Well, speaking of vets, I better vet these clips. Take a little break here and put a little bit more on Veterans Day because it's so important. Here's a little Billy Ray Cyrus, Some Gave All. 6:14, Kelly O'Connell Show, Veterans Day. And yeah, I do have stuff on the debate, of course, but we'll get to that. 523-1450, if you want to talk about your experience in the military, 523-1450, feel free to call in, or 805-6180 to text, 805-6180 to text. And we're going to come back and get into just a little bit more Veterans Day.
Called him Sandy Kane. You folks even knew his name. But a hero, yes, was he. Left boy, came back man. Still many just don't understand about the reasons we are free.
All right, so just kind of going through some stuff here for Veterans Day, and there's a lot of great stuff on the net for it. Let me get into a little bit of testimony at a Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, but starting off with some people explaining why they joined the military.
I enlisted in the Army out of patriotism. I ever since I was young, I always wanted to serve my country and serve in the military. I always had toys. I always reenacted little battles in my backyard.
I felt a drive or a need to go serve, something that, you know, less than 1% of the country raises their hand and says, hey, you know, I want to go do that.
I actually came here in eighth grade and saw changing the guard. I had no expectations of being a sentinel to the unknown soldier. I enlisted infantry. I expected to go to a regular infantry unit. And once I got the opportunity to come to the Old Guard and I knew that the tomb was a part of it, I immediately decided that that's something I wanted to do.
I came down here for a changing of the guard one day. And I came and I seen that this was something that I wanted to do. I knew this was bigger than myself. I knew that I would serve a purpose here.
Down here at the tomb, you usually go through 6 to 9 months of training. It's self-paced, so depending on how well you learn your knowledge or how fast you learn your knowledge, how well you can learn to put together a uniform, all the measurements on the uniform are within 1/64 of an inch.
You learn to shine your shoes with kiwi and water. You also build every single thing that's on your uniform.
And as well as, you know, outside portion, learning how to do the weapons inspection or learning how to walk, you know, keeping everything within a 21-second count.
The unknowns gave everything they had for us. So we believe that it's the least we can do to demand perfection out of ourselves when we're honoring them.
What we do down here means a lot to a lot of people, and we carry that on ourselves a lot. We know what we do, and we strive to be perfect just because of it.
Perfection is our standard, and knowing in the back of my mind that that's an unattainable goal, but you want to get as close to it as you can.
You work 24-hour shifts. When you're out there at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, it can get pretty trying to stay awake and, you know, walk around and get real cold or get real hot. So you have to really dig deep and find that motivation.
I stood guard during Hurricane Irene. I remember just standing there. I could feel the wind just pushing. Like every time we would change shoulders, I could feel that wind was trying to take that weapon from me. But as long as you stood there and knew what you were trained to do.
Yeah, this is crazy. I got trees blowing around to my left and right, and I'm standing here, you know, and then that's when you got to dig deep and remember why you're standing there.
You have that humbleness instilled in you that you want to do the job no matter the conditions, because those unknowns gave their life, and the little you can give to them is the fact that you can stand out there and take a little bit of discomfort. I had a buddy that just lost his life in Afghanistan a week ago. I first got the news, it hadn't settled in, but it made me that day especially, my drive, my motivation to do what I do here really stood out. And I knew that if anything, I could do it for him, because he was a very close friend of mine. And I know I don't know every soldier, but I know every soldier gives every single thing they've got to do this job that we do. And it means something to me.
Currently, the tomb says known but to God, because that's where they, you know, who they're known to by right now, because we don't know who they are. But I'm hoping someday when I pass on, you know, many, many years from now, that I'll get to know their name. I think a lot of people look at more material objects in life than they do what you've done and what you've accomplished. And it isn't really like what you've accomplished, as far as you don't have to be, you know, a big rock star or a football player, but just be who you are. The fact that you can go out there and touch someone's life, or you can go out there and just with a simple change of a guard, you know, you can inspire somebody or touch somebody emotionally.
Well, that's the Tomb of the Unknowns, and here's a little bit on the history of TAPS, the Bugler's Cry, at when they're laying to rest a member of the military.
Of all the military bugle calls, none is more easily recognized or more apt to render emotion than the bugle call TAPS. Once you start the first three notes, it's recognized anywhere in the world. Bugle calls have been used in the United States military ever since there's been a military. Actually, ever since there's been armies. In the Bible, it talks about great trumpet players at the head of a large army. TAPS is a very important call because when it's sounded in the evening, it tells the soldier who's about to go to sleep that everything is safe and secure for the evening, that he doesn't have to worry about being attacked, that there are guards out there on the wall watching. The call is uniquely American, and almost everyone who hears it has an understanding. They've had someone in their family who served in the military, so it's a very emotional call for them, especially at funerals. There are many myths and stories associated with the origin of taps. The most popular one is that of a Union captain who finds a wounded Confederate soldier on the battlefield, and it turns out to be his son. He brings the wounded soldier back behind lines, and in his pocket he finds some music. The young man unfortunately dies. In his pocket, the music that he found was the music for taps. Now, while this is a wonderful story that tells about how both sides of the Civil War were fought by family members, it's a myth. That wonderful story came about from Robert Ripp, believe it or not. Ripley had a television show. The show lasted for 13 episodes before it was pulled. On the last one, the story of the Union captain and his Confederate son appears. Ripley's biographer wrote that even by Ripp standards, the story was just a little too far-fetched. The true story is that the call came about through General Daniel Butterfield. General Daniel Butterfield loved bugle calls. In fact, he had his own bugle calls made up for his own troops. Bugle calls were very important on the battlefield in that they directed troops which way to go. Sometimes in the confusion of battle, some troops would not know when a bugle would be sounding. Was that our call or was that for another regiment? So Daniel Butterfield had calls made specifically for his troops. The original bugle call that General Daniel Butterfield didn't like derived from the French, as all the bugle calls in the United States military at the time. And it was the call for the lights out, and it sounded like this. And as you can tell, that's a very martial sounding call. Daniel Butterfield did not like that call, felt that it was just too formal. He wanted something a little smoother to reflect and evoke the emotion that he felt for his men. He was very proud of his brigade and felt that what they did for him was important, and he thought he would like to honor them by coming up with this new bugle call. And what he did was to find an old bugle call that had gone out of service just prior to the Civil War. He took the last 5.5 measures and rearranged it. He called in his bugler, and together they came up with the new 24 notes we know today as taps. The call was first played in that July evening of 1862. The next morning, buglers approached Norton and asked him, "Where did you find that call? It's a wonderful new call." He then told them where he had gotten the call and furnished music. Pretty soon, the call was being used by the entire Union Army. The word taps itself is as interesting as the origin of the call. The word taps was at the beginning thought to be a derivation of the Dutch word tap-toe. Now that means turn off the taps. Back during the 1500s, the sergeant major would take a drummer and go through the town beating the tap-toe, signaling all the soldiers should return to the garrison for the final roll call of the day, but also indicating to the barkeepers that they should stop selling liquor to the soldiers. In other words, turning off the tap. Today, the word taps comes from the three drum taps that were played by a solitary drummer on the parade field to actually signal lights out when there wasn't a bugler available to sound the call. In the slang of the soldiers, it was just short to the taps instead of the drum taps. And then when the bugle started playing the taps we know today, soldiers naturally called the new piece that they heard in the evening taps. Taps probably got its most worldwide airing in 1963 at the funeral of President John F. Kennedy. It not only showed what funerals were like in Arlington, but gave an exposure of taps on live television throughout the world. I've sounded taps over 2,000 times at national cemeteries. I've sounded taps at private funerals. And I have been to funerals where the most hardened combat veteran, once you would start playing it, will start crying. It's always an emotional thing for the family. It's their one time they're going to hear it. It sort of brings down the curtain on someone's life. And it brings a sense of closure to the family, that final piece of music as the veteran is laid to rest. Traditions are important, and sounding taps is the most sacred duty a bugler can perform.
Amazing. I remember this this scene out of The Good and the Bad and the Ugly where this guy's dying. It's good. The movie The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is this has got this scene in it. It's set during the Civil War. This famous movie with Clint Eastwood and you know, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's got this great final gun scene, this three-way gunfight, actually in the middle of a military cemetery. But there's a scene where the soldier dies, and Clint Eastwood comes up, and he notices this guy laying at the edge of this battlefield. And the guy's clearly gravely or mortally wounded. And so the kid, he's just a kid, he just kind of motions, and Clint Eastwood takes this cigar and hands it to him, and he takes a last puff off the cigar before he dies. But there's some great music that goes along with it. Anyway, 6:31, we're honoring the veterans that make the freedom in this country possible. Veterans Day. Kelly O'Connell, 6:31, and be back. And I've got something from Reagan, too, next on this. I've got this great statement about Veterans Day from Ronald Reagan. Check this out. It's amazing. This, wow. I mean, it would be so great to have a leader like this again. listen to the humility of this guy and his really had warmth. He really had an interest in other people, and he believed that being in office meant to serve others. He was there to try to make the world a better place, try to help America regain its footing. But check this out. This is amazing.
A few moments ago, I placed a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. And as I stepped back and stood during the moment of silence that followed, I said a small prayer. And it occurred to me that each of my predecessors has had a similar moment. And I wondered if our prayers weren't very much the same, if not identical. We celebrate Veterans Day on the anniversary of the armistice that ended World War I. The armistice that began on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. And I wonder, in fact, if all America's prayers aren't the same as those I mentioned a moment ago. For all we can ever do for our heroes is remember them and remember what they did, and memories are transmitted through words. We see these soldiers in our mind as old and wise. We see them as something like the founding fathers, grave and gray-haired. But most of them were boys when they died, and they gave up two lives, the one they were living and the one they would have lived. When they died, they gave up their chance to be husbands and fathers and grandfathers. They gave up their chance to be revered old men. They gave up everything for our country, for us. And all we can do is remember. There's always someone who is remembering for us. No matter what time of year it is or what time of day, there are always people who come to this cemetery, leave a flag or a flower or a little rock on a headstone. And they stop and bow their heads and communicate what they wished to communicate. I think sometimes of General Matthew Ridgway, who the night before D-Day tossed sleepless on his cot and talked to the Lord and listened for the promise that God made to Joshua. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. We are surrounded today by the dead of our wars. We owe them a debt we can never repay. All we can do is remember them, what they did, and why they had to be brave for us. All we can do is try to see that other young men never have to join them. Today, as never before, we must pledge to remember the things that will continue the peace. Today, as never before, we must pray for God's help in broadening and deepening the peace we enjoy. Let's pray for freedom and justice and a more stable world. And let us make a compact today with the dead. A promise in the words for which General Ridgway listened, I will not fail thee nor forsake thee.
Amazing, amazing prayer, amazing statements from Ronald Reagan. Truly one of the greatest Americans in history. All right, so let's take a little diversion here and let's come back and talk about this debate, huh? Now, I got a beef with the debate, but I'll come back and tell you about it. But we are honoring the service people, at past and present, dead, living and dead, the quick and the dead, for their service. Without the military, we would not be a free country. And there's no doubt about that. Anyway, little Billy Ray Cyrus, some gave all. Kelly O'Connell, 641. And it's the 11th day of the 11th month, 2015. We'll come back and talk about the debate.
I can't forget the look in his eyes or the tears he cried.
He said these words to me. All gave some gave all.
Okay, so I got a real beef with this debate. I mean, you're going to have a presidential debate and you put it behind a paywall, or you make it so that people can't even find it to listen to it. Now, I was at some friend's house and it wasn't, you know, we couldn't find it on cable anywhere. And I had to go home and kind of pick through it on the internet. You can find anything on the internet, and they were doing it. I think they were doing it live on the internet by the time I got home. Yeah, they were doing it live because I got the closing statements, but I think it's a disservice, and Fox Business News was stupid to not sell it to the other, you know, cable channels or to the, you know, we need to get more information to voters. So anyway, here's just a few clips from this thing.
Middle ground that brings both of these together. Exactly right. That we have to defend this nation. You think defending this nation is expensive? Try not defending it. That's a lot more expensive, but you can do that and pay for it. You can do that and also be fiscally responsible. You know, I mentioned that the 25 programs that I put out today that I would eliminate them. Among them are corporate welfare, like sugar subsidies. Let's take that as an example. Sugar subsidies. Sugar farmers farm on roughly 0.2% of the farmland in America, and yet they give 40% of the lobbying money. That sort of corporate welfare is why we're bankrupting our kids and grandkids. I would end those subsidies to pay for defending this nation.
Senator, we need to move on.
Pretty interesting, in my opinion. Cruz to me always sounds fantastic. He's a great, whether you agree with him or not, he's a great speaker. You know, here's a little from Kasich versus Trump on deporting illegal immigrants. Think about the children, et cetera.
We are a country of laws. We need borders. We will have a wall. The wall will be built. The wall will be successful. And if you think walls don't work, all you have to do is ask Israel. The wall works, believe me. Properly done. Believe me.
Can we just send 5 million people back with no effect on the economy?
You're going to have to bring people. You're going to have to send people out. Look,
so
we're a country. We're a country of laws. We either have a country or we don't have a country. We are a country of laws. Going to have to go out, and they'll come back. But they're going to have to go out, and hopefully they get back. But we have no choice if we're going to run our country properly and if we're going to be a country.
Thank you, sir.
Maria, can we comment on that?
Senator Rubio.
Can we comment on that?
One quick comment. Yes, sir.
Well, look, in 1986, Ronald Reagan basically said the people who were here, if they were law-abiding, could stay. What didn't happen is we didn't build the wall effectively, and we didn't control the border. We need to. We need to control our border just like people have to control who goes in and out of their house. But if people think that we are going to ship 11 million people who are law-abiding, who are in this country, and somehow pick them up at their house and ship them out of Mexico to Mexico, think about the families. Think about the children. So, you know, the answer really is if they've been law-abiding, they pay a penalty. They get to stay. We protect the wall. Anybody else comes over, they go back. But for the 11 million people, come on, folks. We all know you can't pick them up and ship them back across the border. It's a silly argument. It's not an adult argument. It makes no sense.
All I can say is you're lucky in Ohio that you struck oil. That's for one thing.
Let me just tell you that Dwight Eisenhower, good president, great president, people liked him. I like Ike, right? The expression, I like Ike. Moved 1.5 million illegal immigrants out of this country. Moved them just beyond the border, they came back. Moved them again beyond the border, they came back.
didn't like it, moved them way south. They never came back. Dwight Eisenhower. You don't get nicer. You don't get friendlier. They moved 1.5 million people out. We have no choice. We have no choice.
So he just
thank you.
All right. So that's great. That's great debate. What we need in the country, we don't need a bunch of demagogues in these hiding in these places like CNBC, Harwood or whatever that guy's name was, putting their political agendas into questions and then trying to destroy people. The CNBC debate was jaw dropping. It totally discredited the entire it's better. You throw here's the thing that you do, and this is what I try to do on the show a little bit. Throw out a topic and hear what people think. And throw this topic out to the candidates and hear how they handle it. And then you start to get a feel for who they are, what they stand for. We'll come back and talk more about the debate. Kelly O'Connell, Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day, 650 on the 11th day of the 11th month, 2015. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, and 523-1450 is the number to call in, and 805-6180 to text.
Some stood through for the red, white, and blue, and some had to fall.
All right, so we've been talking about Cruz, and there's a lot of people that were very emotional in calling up and saying don't throw Cruz overboard already. And well, I was thinking about this last night. I'd have to pick through his statements and see what the answers are, but his explanation. But I do accept as a premise that he doesn't owe any explanation about his life to the extent that the media didn't pay any attention to Obama's life. So why should Dr. Carson have to explain his life within the scenario of the fact that there was no level of scrutiny laid on Obama? As a matter of fact, not only was there no scrutiny in his life, but that was celebrated as something positive. You know, any investigation into Obama was racist. It was whatever, anti-Muslim, whatever it was supposed to be. All right, here's from Carson defending himself about Politico.
Get right back to our questions, Dr. Carson, to you. You recently railed against the double standard in the media, sir, that seems obsessed with inconsistencies and potential exaggerations in your life story, but looked the other way when it came to then-Senator Barack Obama's. Still, as a candidate whose brand has always been trust, are you worried your campaign, which you've always said, sir, is bigger than you, is now being hurt by you?
Well, first of all, thank you for not asking me what I said in the 10th grade. I appreciate that. But
I'll just forget that follow-up.
the fact of the matter is, you know, what we should vet all candidates. I have no problem with being vetted. What I do have a problem with is being lied about and then putting that out there as truth. And I don't even mind that so much if they do it about with everybody, like people on the other side. But, you know, when I look at somebody like Hillary Clinton, who sits there and tells her daughter and a government official that, no, this was a terrorist attack, and then tells everybody else that it was a video, where I came from, they call that a lie. And I think that's very different from, you know, somebody misinterpreting when I said that I was offered a scholarship to West Point. That's the words that they use. But I've had many people come and say the same thing to me. That's what people do in those situations. We have to start treating people the same and finding out what people really think and what they're made of. And people who know me know that I'm an honest person.
And, I mean, you know, is the president an honest person? Does anybody care that he – I mean, does anybody who's not on the libertarian or right side of the aisle care that the president lied his rear end off about Obamacare just to get it passed? Okay, here's a, one, here's a quickie from Trump.
Candidates, as we gather
– Oh, okay. Well, misplayed that one. Here is one from – see, get a little short nugget from Cruz.
And Maria, I will note, she's got a lot of experience, but her policies have proven disastrous. If you look at foreign policy.
This is about Hillary Clinton, by the way.
Every region on the world has gotten worse. Under her leadership, we abandoned the nation of Israel. Under her leadership, radical Islamic terrorism has been under the rise. Under her leadership and Obama's leadership, Iran is getting $100 billion and on the verge of getting a nuclear weapon. Everything she's put her hand to is touched. And when we talk about the cronyism of Washington, Hillary Clinton embodies the cronyism of Washington. And I'll give you an example of that, which is the congressional exemption from Obamacare, which is fundamentally wrong. And I'll tell you this. If I'm elected president, I will veto any statute that exempts members of Congress. The law should apply evenly to every American. Thank you.
Powerful. Powerful stuff there. All right. So anyway, so the debate seems like it was good. You could go on to YouTube and watch the whole thing. And I think it's in six parts. But it's absolutely shameful that they're putting this stuff behind, you know, I mean, it's bad enough. You can't see some of these great sports contests unless you pay, unless you can figure out a way on the internet to get a freebie. You know what I mean? Not making a confession here, by the way, but you know what I'm saying? But, you know, to put the presidential debate behind a paywall or make it's impossible to find for most people, it's shameful. Absolutely ridiculous. Kelly O'Connell, okay, we're going to come back and talk some more about this debate. But they say that there are people that are sloughing off Dr. Carson and moving on to Rubio and other candidates. So anyway, 659 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We will be back to pick this up again.
And if you ever think of me, think of all your liberties and recall.
All right, it's the 11th day, 11th month, 2015, November 11th, and happy Veterans Day. And hope you're doing well out there, enjoying yourself. If you're a member of the military, thank you, or a former member. And thanks for the people, as they say, who gave all. Thanks very much. No way to repay that kind of a debt, but at least we can mention it and remember them. All right, so if you went to Drudge, which is kind of the, it's basically, you know, Drudge is kind of this, you know, and I don't know if you know the term aggregator, to aggregate, to put together, but what Drudge does is he aggregates news. He collects news stories and sticks them on his website, which is a fairly simple website. So if you have never been there, drudgereport.com. Debate last night, I think it was a good debate. I think it was a fair debate. Let's not have these things, even if it means, I think it's a stupid business decision for Fox News not to sell this to other networks like CNN or whatever. And, of course, they're trying to get people to sign up for their services, but I don't know. I mean, I just think it's a bad model to use. Let's just get this information out there to the poorest or the least cable tied. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Jerry.
Good morning, Jerry. Kelly. What's up?
Been a good show so far. I want to personally thank all the veterans out there and current military members for your service and for mine. There's only two groups of people that died for us: Jesus Christ for our sins, and our soldiers and sailors and Marines for our freedom.
Hear, hear.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Jerry.
I would request if you would find John Wayne's a tape or whatever it is on the flag.
Okay, I'll see if I can do that.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Jerry. Have a good day. All right. So anyway, maybe this is kind of splitting hairs, but the last debate was a debacle, and anybody who was of had any common sense, even people that I know that are liberal, came away from that scratching their heads like, what were they trying to do? I mean, I really think the media, this is something I want to bring up to you because I've been thinking about this. The media, the American media has been biased to the left. I mean, most people will accept that the fact that the media has been at least somewhat biased towards the left. And then you get something like Fox News that comes along that grows at an extraordinary rate because of an opportunity. It's a business opportunity. You know, and all you can hope for in life as a business person is to have an opportunity to get your service or your idea out there. And you've got this kind of ridiculous finagling basically insulting of the candidates. The format was wrong at the CNBC debate, where they wouldn't let people kind of respond to one another, which is what people really wanted to hear. You know, they love this back and forth because it brings up this issue. I think most people want to know if you have, for example, two teams in the NFL that have the best records, you really don't want those in the same division. You want those, or in the same side of the bracket, you want those two teams to come together at the Super Bowl, right? Of all other things being equal. I think people see these debaters out there and they really want to see them mix it up. And so that was the format that works best. And probably the first debate, it happened the best. It was a real buffet for people who enjoy debates. But I wanted to mention to you something there. Okay, there's this guy by the name of Hunter Thompson, whether you've heard of him or not. He did something called gonzo journalism. Now, gonzo journalism had probably some good things and bad things. Some of the bad things, it was associated with excessive drug consumption and doing crazy stunts. But there was a part of Gonzo journalism was associated with this idea of POV, point of view. The journalist didn't pretend to not have a position. The journalist not only had a position, but inserted themselves into the news event themselves. That's what Hunter Thompson did. And, you know, there's books out there, and he wrote Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and everything, which is very entertaining. But if you took part of that idea, you know, get rid of the drugs, of course, and get rid of the news, the journalist inserting themselves into the news, because that's just a distraction ultimately. But if you allowed or caused or had the kind of a media where people could just admit their biases, then you could factor in. You could factor in what these people believed. Okay, they just came out with this report, a study that said 7% of journalists are in the GOP or a Republican. So 93% of the people that you listen to every day on average are liberals or they're Democrats, whatever. And so that brings up the idea of bias. Now, instead of pretending that we, like we've done for years, I mean, and this is the old model when, you know, Harry Reasoner you know, these like old lions, what's that guy's name? Walter Cronkite or whatever. Walter Cronkite. These old journalists pretended to be unbiased. And then, for instance, Walter Cronkite was opposed to the Vietnam War, but he didn't get up and say, I'm liberal and I'm against the Vietnam War. He didn't even have a college degree. You know, he was just somebody that was highly trusted by the people at large. But what he did is he snuck his bias in and then made it look like we were losing the war. And basically, well, whether we should have been in Vietnam or not is not my point. It's that JFK Johnson, he said, if we've lost Walter Cronkite, then we've lost the war. And so we ended up getting out. And I mean, it was a total disaster the way that we left. It was like Iraq. You can't start something and not finish it the right way, because it puts people's lives in the, and so this communist bloodletting where millions of people were killed because we didn't end it the right way. So anyway, my point is point of view. The issue is, let's get the journalists' opinions and beliefs out there so that we can factor it in. And ideally we should have a country where people are given facts and are sophisticated enough to assemble the facts together in a way that tells a story. And then they can draw a conclusion for that. And we're not like that. We used to be, but you know, the main thing that we used to be taught to children in the history of the West was this triumvirate, but it was rhetoric. It was how to make an argument, how to listen to an argument, how to use logic to understand arguments or information, and then how to avoid being propagandized. And that John Locke, I've mentioned this a few times, his teacher, I think his name was Busby. John Locke is the most influential philosopher of our age, the most influential philosopher of, let's say, the last 300 years in terms of politics and stuff like that. And so he was taught not to accept propaganda, but you see the way things are set up now, it's like our kids are being trained to absorb propaganda. It's sad. It's really sickening to see the way that this has been played out, because, I mean, the only thing ultimately we have to defend ourselves with is logic, is the ability to think. Because we're all, you know, think about all of the forces that want to influence us. There is, of course, businesses and marketing want you to have invest in their product. And then you've got the political process where people want you to support their ideas. And I think it's not a coincidence that these people who we associate with the far left, some of which are you know, toiling in the city to try to take the city as far left as possible. These people do not do well at studying history and thinking rationally and logically. It's just not something that is valued, because the politics that they accept or have absorbed have a religious element, meaning that it's hem of the garment. It's in the DNA. You can't question it. It is the bread and butter of what they think about when they think about things that are the most important. There is nothing more important than that. And that is, it's a very diseased way of looking at politics. I mean, politics are important, but they have to be approached the right way, with the right ideals, with the right values and everything. And if you don't do that the right way, if you go the history of leftism, if you approach politics the wrong way, if you make politics the end all be all, that there's nothing beyond it, as the Marxists did and still do, the human toll is extraordinary. I mean, 200 million people were killed last century by their governments in the name of politics, you know? So anyway, we'll take a little break here and come back and talk about this debate a little bit more. Kelly O'Connell, somebody asked me, I ran into someone last night. They asked me to talk more about the difference between socialism and really, you know, when people talk in this country about democracy, what they're really getting at is republicanism, not the GOP, but the Republican form of government. So I will in the future, but let's get back and talk a little more about this debate. Kelly O'Connell, 719, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-61802 text. And we're going to come back and talk about this debate. And everybody's favorite, by the way, Ray Charles.
For heroes proved in liberating strife,
all right, some more clips here for you. And if you watched, who did you think won? Well, the people who voted on Drudge, who might be more conservative, I don't know, but they thought that 52% or such thought that Trump won, and there were tens of thousands, 50,000 people voted, 100,000, whatever. Check this out, though. Here's Cruz. The I'm tired of being told I'm anti-immigrant. It's offensive.
Senator Cruz, entitlements. You've argued for raising the retirement age and reducing benefits for future retirees. But reducing any sort of benefits for the elderly has always been notoriously hard to do politically. When Speaker Paul Ryan proposed replacing traditional Medicare with federally funded private plans a few years ago, a liberal group responded with a commercial that featured a granny being pushed off a cliff. What's going to be different this time?
Well, my mom is here, so I don't think we should be pushing any grannies off cliffs. And you misstated what I've said on entitlement reform. What I've said is for seniors, we should make no changes whatsoever. For younger workers, we should gradually raise the retirement age. We should have benefits grow more slowly, and we should allow them to keep a portion of their taxes in a personal account that they control and can pass on to their kids.
I said for future retirees, as you said.
Now, I want to go back to the discussion we had a minute ago because, you know, what was said was right. The Democrats are laughing. Because if Republicans join Democrats as the party of amnesty, we will lose. And, you know, I understand that when the mainstream media covers immigration, it doesn't often see it as an economic issue. But I can tell you, for a million of Americans at home watching this, it is a very personal economic issue. And I will say the politics of it would be very, very different if a bunch of lawyers or bankers were crossing the Rio Grande, or if a bunch of people with journalism degrees were coming over and driving down the wages in the press. Then we would have stories about the economic calamity that is befalling our nation. And I will say, for those of us who believe people ought to come to this country legally and we should enforce the law, we're tired of being told it's anti-immigrant. It's offensive. I am the son of an immigrant who came legally from Cuba to seek the American dream. And we can embrace legal immigrations while believing in the rule of law. And I would note, try going illegally to another country, try going to China or Japan, try going to Mexico, see what they do. Every sovereign nation secures its borders, and it is not compassionate to say we're not going to enforce the laws and we're going to drive down the wages for millions of hardworking men and women. That is abandoning the working man.
That's powerful. That is a powerful argument that he makes. All right. Here is, since there's some Bush lovers out there, I've got a little bit of
absolutely wrong
little Bush here, and we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Kelly. Briefly, you know when Trump said was saying that about Ike?
Yes.
Eisenhower. What was that operation called that where Eisenhower sent the immigrants back to Mexico?
I had never heard of that before. I was amazed. I'm going to have to do some research on it.
I know it. It was called Operation Wetback. Can you imagine if they did that today, what would happen?
Well, they're talking about Trump's talking about taking the people that are here illegally and deporting them. I mean, you know.
But I mean, just everything's so politically correct. Naming an operation Wetback. Can you imagine La Raza, what they would do?
I thought that was
they would go nuts.
I thought that was a joke. You're not joking when you say that.
No, I think it shows you how times have changed, you know? I mean, you can't even – I don't see how Trump could bring that up. I mean, he's appealing to his base, you know, I mean, by this immigration thing, but
– all politicians try to appeal to their base, but anyway, thanks a lot, Mike. Have a good day. All right, folks. Here is – I find that hard to believe that – but anyway, here's from Bush. We're not going to be the world's policeman. We're going to be the world's leader. Jeb, I don't know everything, but I know Jeb Bush is not going to be the world's leader. Check this out.
Hang on this. We're not going to be the world's policeman, but we sure as heck better be the world's leader.
There's a huge difference where without us leading, voids are filled. And the idea that it's a good idea for Putin to be in Syria, let ISIS take out Assad, and then Putin will take out ISIS. I mean, that's like a board game. That's like playing Monopoly or something. That's not how the real world works. We have to lead. We have to be involved. We should have a no-fly zone in Syria. They are barrel bombing the innocents in that country. If you're a Christian, increasingly in Lebanon or Iraq or Syria, you're going to be beheaded. And if you're a moderate Islamist, you're not going to be able to survive either. We have to play a role in this to be able to bring the rest of the world to this issue before it's too late.
Assad.
All right. So, you know, I mean, that's fundamentally true that they're driving Christians. They're either killing them or they're deporting them or they're just causing them to flee the Middle East. The Middle East is being ethnically cleansed of, and there's a genocide against Christians in the Middle East that the president doesn't seem to be interested in that as a topic or a motivation, I find bizarre. All right, here is some Marco, a little taste of Marco Rubio for you. It's bizarre since the president claims to be a Christian.
That I'd like to make about the tax credits. We have to decide what is conservative and what isn't conservative. Is it fiscally conservative to have a $1 trillion expenditure? We're not talking about giving people back their tax money. He's talking about giving people money they didn't pay. It's a welfare transfer payment. So here's what we have. Is it conservative to have $1 trillion in transfer payments, a new welfare program that's a refundable tax credit? Add that to Marco's plan for $1 trillion in new military spending, and you get something that looks to me not very conservative. Thank you.
Governor Kasich. Senator.
No, I get my 60 seconds to respond. He's talking about my tax plan.
Please.
So let me begin with this. I actually believe, first of all, this is their money. They do pay. It is refundable, not just against the taxes they pay to the government, but also on their federal income tax. It's refundable against the payroll tax. Everyone pays payroll tax. This is their money. This is not our money. And here's what I don't understand. If you invest that money in a piece of equipment, if you invest that money in a business, you get to write it off your taxes. But if you invest it in your children, in the future of America, in strengthening your family, we're not going to recognize that in our tax. So the family is the most important institution.
Nevertheless, it's not
very
conservative.
And yes, I do want to rebuild the American military. I know that Rand is a committed isolationist. I'm not. I believe the world is a stronger and a better place when the United States is the strongest military power in the world.
Marco, how is it conservative? How is it conservative to add $1 trillion expenditure for the federal government that you're not paying for? How is it conservative? How is it conservative to add $1 trillion in military expenditures? You cannot be a conservative if you're going to keep promoting new programs that you're not going to pay for.
I may respond more quickly. We can't even have an economy if we're not safe. There are radical jihadists in the Middle East beheading people and crucifying Christians. A radical Shia cleric in Iran trying to get a nuclear weapon. The Chinese taking over the South China Sea. Yes, I believe the world is a safer. No, I don't believe. I know that the world is a safer and better place when America is the strongest military power in the world.
I don't think we're any safer. I do not think we are any safer from bankruptcy court. As we go further and further into debt, we become less and less safe. This is the most important thing we're going to talk about tonight. Can you be a conservative and be liberal on military spending? Can you be for unlimited military spending and say, oh, I'm going to make the country safe? No, we need a safe country. But, you know, we spend more on our military than the next 10 countries combined. I want a strong national defense, but I don't want us to be bankrupt.
Well, and there is a middle ground.
Great. Great debate points. Just amazing. Just wonderful. All right. So we'll come back and hear some more of these clips. 7:34. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on AM on 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 and 805-6180. We'll be back and hear some more great clips.
Who more than self? Country love.
there's a little touch of Trump in the night. Taxes too high, wages too high. Oh, well, unfortunately, the volume's too low. Let's do that again.
Candidates, as we gather tonight in this very august theater, just outside and across the country, picketers are gathering as well. They're demanding an immediate hike in the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Just a few hours ago, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed doing the same for all state workers, the first governor to do so. Mr. Trump, as the leading presidential candidate on this stage, and one whose tax plan exempts couples making up to $50,000 a year from paying any federal income taxes at all, are you sympathetic to the protesters' cause, since a $15 wage works out to about $31,000 a year?
I can't be, Neil. And the reason I can't be is that we are a country that is being beaten on every front, economically, militarily. There is nothing that we do now to win. We don't win anymore. Our taxes are too high. I've come up with a tax plan that many, many people like very much. It's going to be a tremendous plan. I think it'll make our country and our economy very dynamic. But taxes too high, wages too high, we're not going to be able to compete against the world. I hate to say it, but we have to leave it the way it is. People have to go out, they have to work really hard, and they have to get into that upper stratum. But we cannot do this if we are going to compete with the rest of the world. We just can't do it.
So do not raise the minimum wage.
I would not raise the minimum.
All right, so there, and now here is the Donald going after Carly Fiorina. Why does she keep interrupting everyone?
War in Iraq was a mistake. You can be strong without being involved in every civil war around the world.
How would you respond?
Ronald Reagan was strong, but Ronald Reagan didn't.
And Ronald Reagan walked away at Reykjavik. He walked away. He quit talking when it was time to quit talking.
Can I finish with my job?
Why does she keep interrupting everybody?
Yeah.
What? Terrible.
Yeah, I'd like to finish my response, basically.
The feminists are booing, but I mean, everybody up on the stage was, all of the contestants were, they're shaking their heads up and down saying, yeah, why does she keep interrupting? All right, here's some Rubio. And if you're missing clips from Chris Christie and Huckabee, they got put on the child's ticket, so they sat at the child's table because their numbers were not high enough that they were demoted.
The first is, I've never met Vladimir Putin, but I know enough about him to know he's a gangster. He's basically an organized crime figure that runs a country, controls a $2 trillion economy, and is using it to build up his military in a rapid way, despite the fact his economy is a disaster. He understands only geopolitical strength. And every time he has acted anywhere in the world, whether it's in Ukraine or Georgia before that, or now in the Middle East, is because he is testing a weakness. His calculation in the Middle East is that he's seen what this president has done, which is nothing. The president has no strategy. Our allies in the region do not trust us. For goodness sake, there's only one pro-American free enterprise democracy in the Middle East. It's the state of Israel. And we have a president that treats the prime minister of Israel with less respect than what he gives the Ayatollah in Iran. And so our allies in the region don't trust us. Vladimir Putin is exploiting that weakness for purposes of edging the Americans out as the most important geopolitical power broker in the region. And we do have a vested interest. And here's why. Because all those radical terrorist groups that, by the way, are not just in Syria and in Iraq. ISIS is now in Libya. They are a significant presence in Libya and in Afghanistan and a growing presence in Pakistan. Soon they'll be in Turkey. They'll try Jordan. They'll try Saudi Arabia. They are coming for us. They recruit Americans using social media. And they don't hate us simply because we support Israel. They hate us because of our values. They hate us because our girls go to school. They hate us because women drive in the United States. Either they win or we win. We better take this risk seriously. It is not going away on its own.
Thank you, Senator.
I mean, it sounded like Rubio did a pretty good job presenting his ideas at the debate. Okay, 7:42, you're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450. We're also celebrating Veterans Day. And 805-6180 for your text machine. and we'll be back and get some summaries on this debate.
America! America!
All right, so here is try to get a couple of voices in we haven't heard a lot from. Here's some. Oh, we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show is this.
Hey, Kelly, briefly, it's Mike again.
Briefly.
Kelly, when that last snippet you played of Rubio,
yeah,
he referred to terrorists as radical terrorists.
Uh-huh.
How, isn't a terrorist a terrorist? I mean, is it a moderate terrorist?
I don't know. I don't know about that. Anything else?
This guy, well, this Rubio is such a lightweight. I mean, I don't know where he's coming from half the time when he says stuff. A radical terrorist. A terrorist is a terrorist, period. End of story.
Who are you backing, Mike? Please.
I'm not impressed with any of them, but I'd take Trump over any of them.
Okay, thanks for the call. All right, folks, just want to get a little bit more. Here's some from Fiorino.
You know, Mr. Trump fancies himself a very good negotiator, and I accept that he's done a lot of good deals. So Mr. Trump ought to know that we should not speak to people from a position of weakness. Senator Paul should know that as well. One of the reasons I've said that I would not be talking to Vladimir Putin right now, although I have met him as well, not in a green room for a show, but in a private meeting. One of the reasons I've said I wouldn't be talking to Vladimir Putin right now is because we are speaking to him from a position of weakness brought on by this administration. So I wouldn't talk to him for a while, but I would do this. I would start rebuilding the Sixth Fleet right under his nose, rebuilding the military, the missile defense program in Poland right under his nose. I would conduct very aggressive military exercises in the Baltic states so that he understood we would protect our NATO allies and would-be allies. And I might also put in a few more thousand troops into Germany, not to start a war, but to make sure that Putin understands that the United States of America will stand with our allies. That is why Governor Bush is correct. We must have a no-fly zone in Syria, because Russia cannot tell the United States of America where and when to fly our planes. We also have a set of allies. We have a set of allies in the Arab Middle East who know that ISIS is their fight. They have asked us specifically over and over again to support them. King Abdullah of Jordan, a man I've known for a very long time, has asked us for bombs and materiel. We have not provided it. The Egyptians are asking us to share intelligence. We are not. I will. The Kurds have asked us to arm them for 3 years. We're not. I would. The Egyptians, the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, the Bahrainis, the Emiratis, the Kurds, all of these people I know, by the way, understand ISIS is their fight, but they must see leadership, support, and resolve from the United States of America.
We must have the strongest
military on the face of the planet, and everyone has to know it.
Senator Paul?
All right, so there you have maybe that's your Secretary of State there, somebody who could actually go out and do something. How about some analysis from the people listening in the audience? Here's the Frank Luntz focus group.
Tonight with Frank Luntz and his focus group. Hi, Frank.
Megan, we're in the state that probably matters most. We're just 90 days from when New Hampshire casts its votes, and New Hampshire is a great predictor of where America goes. So I want a show of hands from our New Hampshire voters. You had a winner tonight. How many of you thought it was Marco Rubio? Now, there was one significant segment, Megan, and it was very early in the debate where he performed admirably. He's talking about education. Let's take a look.
For the life of me, I don't know why we have stigmatized vocational education. Welders make more money than philosophers. We need more welders and less philosophers. And if we do that,
if we do this, we will be able to increase wages for millions of Americans.
So what was it about Marco Rubio that was so positive? Give me a word or phrase to describe him.
He was very eloquent.
Passionate.
I think he's young.
Very articulate.
Slick.
Charisma.
Strong.
He's inspirational.
Fresh.
He's not my candidate.
Now, I got to ask you a question. You said inspirational. How old are you?
9 years.
So this is your first vote?
Yeah.
Why Rubio?
I agree with him on most policy issues. I mean, I look at all the other plans that the candidates have put out there, and he's the one who I'm most in line with. You know, he's socially conservative. He has a tax plan that's willing to help out families, and that is really important to him in the vision that he has for this new American
You've century. Picked up his language. That's interesting. Now, I want to ask, how many of you switch votes? Some of you came in here supporting a different candidate. Why did you switch?
I switched because I went from Carson to Rubio during this debate, just because I liked his vision for America. I like that he wants to put more money into our military, which I think has been depleted under this president.
Why did you switch?
I was originally supporting Bush, and I switched to Rubio because I liked his passion. I liked his message, his leadership, his vision for the future.
You just made a whole bunch of people very upset down in Bush headquarters. A couple more switch. Tell me why.
I think the biggest reason was he showed some energy. He showed some charisma. He had the ability to connect. Carson's a great guy, but he's just so slow and quiet. And that appeals to a certain group, like the older people.
So let me ask you, by show of hands, some of you, I'm not going to take the bait there. Some of you turned away from Carson tonight and went to other people. I want to hear from you right now. Tell me why.
I changed to Cruz because he has a crystal clear plan. His actions support what he's talking about in the Senate, and he really does reflect what I think is a true America.
So I want to go to a clip. Megan, there was a really powerful clip that Ted Cruz used. He talked about immigration. And just as Ben Carson did in the very first debate, saying that Republicans are not racist, Ted Cruz got righteously indignant about immigration, and watch how high the lines climb.
If a bunch of people with journalism degrees were coming over and driving down the wages in the press. Then we would see stories about the economic calamity that is befalling our nation.
All right. So, and we heard that clip, but here's a little from Krauthammer on that Ben Carson is clueless, and I know a lot of people support him, but check this out.
Us for this post-debate edition of The Factor, live. 2 hours of verbiage from Milwaukee. Did anything important happen? Any of the candidates help or hurt themselves? Any new things put on the table? We'll address all of those questions with some of the best political analysts in the business this evening. Begin with a guy who I think is perhaps the smartest evaluator of political musings in the entire country. Charles Krauthammer joins us from Washington. Now, I should full disclosure say that you wouldn't stay up late unless I said that, but it's true.
Well, that and the small amount that you deposited in my Cayman Islands account.
Right. So which, by the way, Ted Cruz is going to get back, so you better spend it now. All right, what's the headline of the debate in your opinion?
I think the headline is substantive debates tend to be less exciting. And what we got was a pretty substantive debate. We got, and even the intramural arguments were mostly about policy rather than personal stuff. So I thought in a way it was a step up, but it's true. It's less exciting than a cage fight. But nonetheless, I think a few things came out. The guy with the most at stake was Jeb Bush. Unfortunately for him, he had another weak night. I don't want to, you know, kick him around, but it was not what he needed to do. On one of his questions, he gave an answer. Then the Fiorina followed up with a smashing sort of out of the park answer on the same question. And there was a split screen with Bush kind of nodding his head, encouraging her.
What question was that?
A good visual.
What question was that?
I think it had to do with Russia. The others I thought were relatively weak.
Kelly, who's that?
Were Kasich and Carson. Although I don't think that Carson sort of hurt himself. He was still in persona. He had a nice deflecting remark.
All right, let me challenge. So, first of all, Kasich said a lot of things. He had a lot of airtime, but he fell back on the old Ohio thing.
We do have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly Connors Show.
Kelly, it's Ralph. Kelly, great program. You're batting 1,000. You only have 2 more minutes to go. Please don't screw it up. Great program.
Thank you, Ralph. Have a great day. Happy Veterans Day. All right. trying not to screw up this last clip here.
And Bush stayed away from that. All right. And then, you know, people have a tendency to tune out. It's Ohio, Ohio, Ohio. So I think he was a neutral. Ben Carson vanished. He just vanished. Now, I don't know whether that was the fault of the moderators, but he just didn't have a lot of questions directed to him. And the one that he fumbled was macroeconomics, which the doctor is not an expert in. They asked him a macroeconomics question. Would you break up the big banks? I agree with you. He didn't have a good night at all.
And look, the reason that.
And we do have another caller. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
In the words of the great John McEnroe, you cannot be serious. All those candidates up there, everything they said, it just appeals to you guys, radical guys on the right side of the fence here. You're not going to win a general election with this warmongering. Simple as that.
All right.